I am Planta on the line. This is the commentary.ca. There's a magnificent coffee table type book out now called 100 Photos That Changed Canada. It is a fantastic book that tells Canada's story through the photographs that have touched us throughout our history, images that have also unsettled us at times, with marvelous essays from 30 notable writers who contribute commentary to the memorable photos. We get some context on the images, the people depicted therein, as well as some necessary insight on who captured that moment of history. I've seen the book prominently displayed at shops and the sort, and it's a great holiday season gift, and not just for Christmas, because it really should be displayed in our homes. Sure, there are photos that aren't here that perhaps should, but it's a view onto the country that's welcome. The book is edited by Mark Reed, the editor of the Beaver magazine, who joins me now. Its foreword is written by Charlotte Gray, and its preface is by Deborah Morrison, president of Canada's National History Society. Mr. Reed and Ms. Morrison will be joined by the CBC's Don Newman this Thursday, the 3rd of December, at the Chapters downtown here in Vancouver at 7:30 p.m. to discuss the book and more. 100 Photos That Changed Canada is published by HarperCollins. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program in Winnipeg this day, Mark Reed. Good morning, Mr. Reed.
Hello, how are you?
Thanks for joining us. Pretty good, thanks. This book grew out of a series you did in the magazine of 10 photos, right?
Yeah, it started about 2 years ago in the summer of 2008. We put together a feature called 10 Photos That Changed Canada. And at the time, I had, I had been running the magazine for about a year, and one of the things I was really keen to do was to experiment with ways of telling stories. In our magazine, certainly there are articles with thousands, 3,000 to 5,000 word articles, but I was sort of thinking, is there a different way to look at Canada's history, one that's a bit more visual, that is a bit more, has a bit more of an emotional pull? And so we started talking about the power of photography. And the power of photography to move us and to make us remember a moment and a time and to bring us back a where were you when moment in Canadian history. And I put together a panel of experts who were photo editors and award-winning photographers and photojournalists and photojournalism instructors, and we put together 10 photos that we thought would make any person's list of iconic photos from Canada's past. And it was so successful that we actually started thinking, well, gosh, if we could find 10, are there 20? And if there's 20, are there 30? And there were 30. And then it almost was like an auction in a way. And next thing you know, we actually had way more photos than we could ever put into a book. And and stemming from that became the 100 Photos That Changed Canada, which is, on shelves now. And hopefully, as you said, gives people at least an introduction, if you will, to their own past.
And I'm sure you could have come up with 1,000 photos.
Well, it's funny you say that because at one point, I just the pure research into this was months long, and required going to photo archives, consulting with many archivists, photographers, historians across the country. And at the end of about 4 months of research, I had managed to whittle it down to a short list of 300 photos. And then came the tough part, you know, which ones do you keep, which ones do you put on the cutting room floor? It really was tough because every time you made a decision to leave a photo out, there was sort of a pang where you're like, oh, gosh, is that another story of Canada's past that's not going to be told?
As the editor, what's the criterion for making the 100?
Well, the way I looked at it was I sort of set up three criteria that I wanted to look at. First of all, this is I'm a news guy. I used to work in newspapers at a national news service. So for me, it's this intangible, newsworthy moment. There had to be something. There had to be an occasion in which something happened of note. And, of course, that's ambiguous. That's a little loose. But that's just the nature of, you know, you get a gut feeling that something has happened that matters to Canadians. So that was number one. That's the first filter. The second filter was, is there a fantastic photo of this event? I mean, there's lots of great transformative events in Canada's past in which a photographer wasn't there. And so just by definition, there had to be, and I didn't want it just to be a bland photo that wouldn't turn heads. As much as possible, I wanted it to be a beautiful photo. Even the terrible photos had to stand up on their own photographic merit in the book. And then finally, the viewer has to feel something for this to be truly iconic in my mind. You know, the photos that I have chosen here all represent moments in which we have changed as Canadians, our view of ourselves might have changed, or literally that history has changed overnight after the photo was published, but they all share a unique quality, which is that hopefully when you see these events, you will come away after reading the essay and seeing the photos feeling something about your country, whether that's pride, shame, horror, or joy. Is really up to the viewer, but I tried as much as possible to get photos that met all three of those criteria, and you know, I think we have 100 in there that stand up to the test.
And how do you gauge change? Like, is there a photo? Like, does the photo have to have an immediate effect? Like you said, that once it was published, the next day, after people read the paper or saw it on television, that they thought something about that particular event, or does something have to happen later on? Like, does a photo, are there photos in the book where it changes our view of the moment? It could be years later.
Yeah, you know, Joe, I think you hit it on the head there in looking at the different ways that photos can change us. Because, you know, when I say 100 photos that change Canada, it's really kind of a cocky title in a way, sort of a bold title, you know, because there are people that would say, well, photos can't change anything. What are you talking about? The entire premise is flawed. It makes no sense. Photos can't change a single thing. They're just a snapshot of a moment in time. But there are literally photos out there that after they were published, the course of history was changed. I'll give you a good example. There's a photo in there from 1974. It shows Bob Stanfield, former premier of Nova Scotia, and he's grimacing, his knees are together, he looks awkward, and he's dropping a football. Now, this was 1974, and he is going toe-to-toe with this sexy, intellectual man's man named Pierre Trudeau. And if you've ever seen pictures of Bob Stanfield, he is no Pierre Trudeau. And so he had a real image problem going into that election. So he and his assistant basically concocted a plan on the tarmac of a Northern Ontario airport while waiting for their plane to refuel during the campaign, that they would toss a football around and try to look manly doing it while the photographers were standing there so that they could get photos in the paper, counteracting this charisma of Trudeau. And the problem is, this photo, which we have in the book, is really one of the first examples of a photo op gone bad in Canada, because although Bob Stanfield caught the football about 25 times in a row, and the photographers took pictures of him catching it and looking quite manly doing it, he dropped it on one occasion. And so the photographer, Doug Ball, doing the job he was hired to do, sent all of his photos into the newspaper wire, and the next day the Globe and Mail ran on the front page in gigantic type underneath this, over top of the photo of him dropping the football, it says, "A political fumble." And that sound you heard was the sound of the air being let out of his campaign. People saw him and instantly got an impression of Bob Stanfield as a bumbler. If you can't hold the ball, how can you run with the country? And, you know, to this day, some people say that Bob Stanfield was the best prime minister we've never had. Now, the irony is, Bob Stanfield ran into Doug Ball at a dinner later on in their lives. And Doug, I met Doug, and he told me he felt a little bad because, you know, this photo had crushed Stanfield's career so badly. And Stanfield, who's actually quite a nice guy, came up to him and said, "You know what? Don't worry about it, Doug. I have no hard feelings. Some guys just don't have any of the luck." And he said, "You know, if Bob Stanfield walked on water, the headline the next day would be that Bob Stanfield can't swim." You know, another photo, just very quickly, that is a good example of things changing overnight, is a terrible photo I think it's a necessary photo. We need to have it in there, but it's a very difficult photo for all Canadians to look at, and that is the 1993 photo that shows the Canadian soldier holding up the tortured African man, Sirdane Aroun from Somalia. Yeah. Now, the Somalia scandal, of course, is we went in with the airborne regiment, supposedly, to be the good guys in this affair, and Corporal Clayton Matchy and another soldier basically beat this teenager to death and then took trophy photos. Now, nobody saw the photos. They were introduced as evidence at the court proceedings, and there was a publication ban on it. And up until that point, Canadian society had not really, it just did not hit home exactly what we did over there. There were rumblings, there were rumors, but without that visual evidence of just that bloodied, beaten face, and Matchy holding his head up, giving the number one sign. I think it was two newspapers went to court and fought and got that ban removed, and it was thrown on the front pages. Absolute, absolute chaos across the country. People in outrage, political figures in outrage. The inquiry was launched. The Airborne Regiment was shut down. Morale was trashed across the military, and has only recovered in probably the last 10 years in thanks to the Afghanistan mission, where Canadians were once again able to feel pride in their mission. But for the longest time, that photo hit home, the horror of this event, and made us take a long, hard look in the mirror and realize that, you know, we weren't the good guys in this case. We were the bad guys. So those are two examples where right overnight things changed. There were other photos, and this is a BC example, where we actually can use a photograph to see how much we have changed. In 1914, we have a photo in there, and it shows a bunch of men from India. They're Sikhs, and they're hoping to move to Canada. Now, they're entitled under British law to move here. They're part of the British Empire, no different than a guy named John Smith who happens to live in downtown London. And yet, because so much racism was prevalent in B.C. in the early 1900s, we actually called the Navy out, and we stopped them aboard their ship in Burrard Inlet, and we basically trained our guns on them and threatened to blow them out of the water if they dared to step off the boat. And we kept them on there for weeks in humid, stinking conditions, barely any food or water, while we basically ran around as much as we could to change the laws on the books, close all these loopholes that would allow us to kick them out of the country. And at the end of the day, we did it. And we kicked them out. Now, when I say how much we have changed is that when that photo ran in 1914, the general reaction in British Columbia would have been a round of applause. Most of the white citizens of BC would have been thrilled to hear that this boatload of Indians was sent back packing to where they came from. And yet today, we can look back through the 21st century filter and say, my God, what were we doing? What was wrong with us? Why didn't we recognize the value that immigrants could bring to our country? And we can actually see in less than 100 years how much we as a society has changed. Now, mind you, how much we still have left to go. We're not perfect. But it's one of those photos, and there's many in there, that really make us, again, rethink who we thought we were as a country and kind of get a better sense of where we are today.
Another chilling photo in the book is, and I hadn't seen it before, because when this all happened, I was, I think, seven, was L'École Polytechnique, the Montreal Massacre.
Yeah.
Would you describe that photo? It's a police officer taking down Christmas decorations, but before that, he's behind the striking image of...
Yeah, of course. If people today... now, I got to remind you, I, you know, the gun registry, you're pro, you're con, you know, it's one of these... these debates that are still going on. But when you see this photo of 1989, December 6, 1989, I challenge any Canadian just to not have their heart break. And what it is a photograph of a plainclothes police officer, and he's reaching up with his left hand to take down Christmas decorations, seemingly an innocent photo. You're wondering, why is he taking the photo, the decorations down? Then you look in the foreground, and on an orange chair is the slumped, slain body of one of the women who were students at the Polytechnique school in Montreal, the École Polytechnique. One of the women who were just killed on that crazy rampage when that fellow walked in there and just decided because they were women they had to die. This photo actually was taken by a man named Alan McGuinness, who only got the photo because he got two journalism students to basically lift him up and basically boost him up so he could shoot it through the window. And when it ran on the Montreal Gazette on the front page, it was met by howls of outrage. Hundreds of people wrote to say they were canceling their subscription or furious that they would show this. And the editors basically stood by their photo saying that this photo, more than any other photo that was taken that day, encapsulates the horror, just the banality and the stupidity of this crime. You know, that a man could hate women so badly that he would take up a weapon and just start indiscriminately firing at students because they had the gall to become engineers. Just a terrible moment in our past. And yet, it's one of those ones where, you take a step back. The name of the book is 100 Photos That Changed Canada. It's not 100 Photos That Make Us Smile, although there's ones in there that do this. And it's not the 100 Photos That Make Us Feel Good or Swell Us With Pride, although there are plenty that do that as well. I firmly believe that if we as a history society, the Beaver is produced by Canada's National History Society, if we as a history society and we as a general public are afraid to look our own history square in the eye and own up to the bad parts as well as celebrate the good, then we're doomed from the get-go. How can we ever have an honest view of who we are today as Canadians and where we're going if we're too afraid to look at our past and look at these shameful moments and just basically own up to them and accept that this was part of the story of Canada, a terrible part, but still a part nonetheless.
A photo in the book that surprised me at its inclusion, and it sits on my desk here, is the Churchill photograph by Karsh.
Yes.
How did that change Canada?
Well, that photo was taken in 1941 at one of the darkest points of World War II. Now, many people have seen the photo. I mean, my gosh, if you've seen it, there he is, the British bulldog, the roaring lion. He's holding on to a chair. He's got this scowl on his face, this determined glare. His left arm is cocked. And yet very few people know that that's actually taken in Ottawa. That's taken in the speaker's chamber, the head of the speaker of the Senate. It's in his chamber, and basically this was 1941, and Churchill had just finished addressing Parliament. Now it is after the fall of Hong Kong and just prior to the attack on Pearl Harbor. Now this is a dark period of World War II. I mean, many people see the imminent fall of Britain as a not only just a likelihood, as a certainty, that Hitler will sweep through England, killing, destroying, and that darkness will fall over Europe and probably the rest of the free world. Churchill is in Ottawa. He gives a rousing speech that was broadcast around the world, a speech of hope, and then afterwards the Prime Minister, Mackenzie King, brought him back into the Speaker's chamber and introduced him to this young upcoming photographer named Yusuf Karsh, who lived in Ottawa, and basically said, "I want Karsh to take your photo." Well, Churchill was mad. He thought it was a waste of time. He said, "I'll give you 5 minutes, that's it." And he wouldn't take a cigar out of his mouth. And Karsh offered him an ashtray and said, "Sir, would you mind putting your cigar down?" And he said, "No, I'm not going to put my cigar down," and kept puffing away. So Karsh, just at the moment he was going to take the photo, suddenly reached forward, jumped forward, grabbed the cigar out of his mouth, and yanked it out of his mouth. And that ticked off look you see, that determined, furious look you see on Churchill's face, is because he's mad because his favorite cigar has been taken away. Now, that's all the background. Now, why did this photo change Canada? A person has to understand that if you were a Canadian in World War II and you have watched Hitler take over Poland, sweep through Eastern Europe, march through the streets of Paris, almost decimate the British army at Dunkirk, and basically be seemingly weeks away from destroying England and occupying it, you're frightened, you're scared, and you're looking for a hero. You're looking for anything that will give you a little bit of hope that maybe there will be a light tomorrow. And this photo, this look of determination on Churchill's face, said in one shutter snap that the world may fall, but I will stand, and I will be here, and that Hitler will have to come through me to get you. And by this he meant all of the British Empire, the free world. And this photo was reproduced thousands upon thousands upon thousands of times, and sent all around the world to anywhere where the Nazis hadn't taken over. And it was put up on the walls, and it was basically saying that the British bulldog, this roaring lion, will roar, and he will fight to the end. And if he's willing to fight, are you willing to fight? And that's how it changed people, is that it gave them a spark of hope at a time in which basically the world seemed like it had no hope.
Are there photos that you wished were in the book? Like, as you travel the country with Newman, people obviously come up to you and talk to you about the book. Do they ask you why a certain photo is not there, and if so, what photos do they want in the book?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually glad you said that, Joe, because it really is... the thing I did not want with the publication of this book is to have it be the end of a conversation. In other words, stop talking about it. These are the 100 photos, period. This is the definitive list. Nothing else could fit. We're a history society. We have this weight of expertise behind us, and these are the photos that changed Canada. By no means is this that book. What this book is, it's a list of 100 photos that changed Canada. And depending on who you are, where you live, I'm from Nova Scotia. I'm a 38-year-old guy from Nova Scotia. If I put together 100 photos that I think are iconic, would they be the same as a woman born and raised in Toronto? Or a First Nations man living on coastal BC? We would have there would be some photos that would make everybody's list, I'm sure. But then there'd be this variety of photos that would come because of the way we view Canada. And so what I wanted this book to be was an opportunity for Canadians to start a conversation about their own past and about what photos and what moments from our past matter to them. And to make the argument, you know, I mean, there's a lot of photos in here that people may be seeing for the first time. And I would argue that if we don't show them these photos, if we don't put them out there and ask people to debate them, debate whether you think Churchill's photo should be in there or not. Is there a photo there's a photo that's missing from this book that I really think should be in there. But, you know, at the end of the day, myself and the other people on our board of directors and others who the historians and elsewhere, we only had room for 100. But, you know, a photo that really would have made sense in my mind would have been a photo, and it sounds very strange, a photo of one of the hijacked planes hitting the Twin Towers in 2001.
Right.
Because we all forget that there were more than a couple dozen Canadians killed in that attack. And following the attack, every plane flying over North America was rerouted to Newfoundland and airports across the country. There was a Canadian in charge of NORAD at the time that scrambled the jets to go in and go into high alert. After the attack, going to an airport has never been the same ever again. The amount of security you have to go through. Within a year after this attack, and as a direct relation from the attack, we sent troops to Afghanistan in a war that we're still fighting on the hunt for Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. And so, you know, in my mind, the argument against it is that it's American history. It's a picture of an American image. But is it a photo that you could at least argue could be in the book? Because it changed Canada? Sure, there is. Sure, it's an issue. There's other photos that obviously could be in. There's photos that people might want to take out, but I think that's half the fun. You know, is that I can just imagine a dinner party where people are having a glass of wine, looking at the book, and they get into this fantastic conversation about whether or not these photos belong there or not. If that happens, I'll consider this a success, because it's designed to get people talking.
And I think you have people I've showed the book to. We've had little discussions about it already. The one photo that I think belongs here is that photo of Pearson with three of his cabinet ministers that are swearing in, Trudeau, Turner, and Chrétien.
Yep.
And I've always had a secret desire. There's two photographs of that, of the four of them. Mm-hmm. There's another photograph where there's a guy standing behind them against a wall, and he's got glasses on. I've always wondered who that person was.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's all these future prime ministers. That was one of our shortlisted photos.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about. There's like four prime ministers, future present and future prime ministers in the line there at the time. Yeah,
I've always wanted to write a novel about these four prime ministers and then that one guy and whatever happened to him, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, you know, there's photos in there that I think would make everybody's list, and yet they're in there for a different reason than people realize. Like, for instance, the another BC photo is the last spike.
Yeah.
1885, there's Donald Smith driving the spike that linked Canada to BC, the culmination of Sir John A's national dream, you know, yada, yada. Everybody knows, everybody's learned that in school. What I like about that photo, and again, this is where photos can tell us how much we have changed. When you look at that photo, and everyone can picture it in their mind, there's all those guys with the mutton chops and the big beards, and they're all standing around in a circle, and there's Donald Smith whacking that spike in. The one thing, you think to yourself, who's missing from the photo? One group of people that's missing from that photo are the Chinese laborers who died building the railway.
Right.
And why weren't they in the photo? Well, they weren't in the photo because we didn't care enough about them in 1885 to include them in the photo. Who else isn't in the photo? There's no women in the photo. Why aren't there any women? Women weren't important. In fact, there's very few, if any, average white workers in that photo, because this was a photo, this was history as presented by the elite, how the people in power wanted us to see history. So we have a bunch of important men gathered around doing an important function, uniting a country, in a photo that Pierre Burton has called the most iconic photo in Canadian history, and it is missing virtually everyone that actually made that moment take place. And that there's actually another photo called the alternate last spike photo, which was taken by the same photographer after all the big shots had gone away. And he got some of the average Joes together, and there they are, very proud of their accomplishment. And they're standing there with their spikes and their hammers, and their feet are up on the rails. And the pride is just beaming off their face. And virtually no one has ever seen it, because at the time, nobody cared. And so you look again, you look at in just over 100 years, how much we as a society hopefully have changed, and what we can learn about ourselves. By looking not, when we look at a photo and see what's not there as opposed to what's there sometimes, it's just a really interesting different way of looking at these photos.
Mark, it's been nice to talk to you today. Continued good luck with this book. I hope it sells a lot of copies.
Well, I thanks very much, and you know, I really look forward to everybody coming down to Chapters on Thursday night to talk about this in person. You know, hopefully the conversation we've started here will keep going. I guess the Chapters at Robson at 7:30. I've been to so many cities now, and just to have the conversations with the average Canadians and talk about the photos, it's just an absolute pleasure, and I really appreciate this opportunity.
You're very welcome indeed, and thank you for starting this conversation. The book is called 100 Photos That Changed Canada. It's a wonderful view about what this country is and how much this country has changed and where we're headed, I guess. It's edited by Mark Reed, the editor of the Beaver magazine. It's published by HarperCollins. Mark Reed on the line from Winnipeg in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.